Jesus.
Yell out loud!
I'm walking here! I'm walking!
Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH, streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. A principal was allegedly so abusive and incompetent that she ended up getting removed from a school. Only she's going to be placed in a new school very soon, so maybe we're not getting the full story, and that is what's trending.
What's trending in the classroom?
Seattle Times says that for the last several years, parents and staff have been complaining about a principal at Rainier View Elementary. Anitra Jones is her name. They say that she created an unsafe environment and a, quote, culture of fear and anxiety, which is something I strive for each and every day.
And you succeed.
Thank you. He's new. You think I'm going to go easy on him? No. I've thrown 3 staplers so far. Only 1 hit. Everyone relax. Calm down. This whole culture of fear and anxiety to me kind of triggers, you've got a lot of young people who are working in that school maybe, and they just don't like to be challenged. So let's go through some more of the complaints. My favorite one is anytime someone uses a disproportionality argument, what do I think about disproportionality arguments? Say they're lazy.
They're lazy.
They're lazy. They tell you what. They don't tell you why. That's all they do, is they tell you the what. And they complain, according to the Seattle Times, that under this principle, there has been, quote, a disproportionate discipline practice that fell heavily on black and brown students. Now, Anitra Jones is black, an important piece of this, because oftentimes it's these white principals who just hate black students. I'm going to assume she probably doesn't hate black kids. I'm going to assume she doesn't hate brown kids. I'm going to assume she doesn't hate kids because she did get into education. Now, I also will note, and I feel like people should probably do this, who reported the kids to the principal to begin with? Was she just wandering around the halls and saying, hey, you black kid, suspension? No, I'm going to assume, let's just give the benefit of the doubt, a student was acting out in class, okay? Principal, she's got an office, right?
I think so.
Okay, she's not like in a classroom?
Yeah.
Okay. And if she was in a classroom, probably not all of them at once.
Presumably.
Be physically impossible.
Presumably.
I mean, well, you know, let's not, you know what they say about people who make presumptions. They make a pre out of you and me or something. Can we just say something like the teachers are the ones who send the students to the principal's office? Maybe something has changed since I was a kid 10 years ago. Relax. Y'all are the ones who are reporting the kids. Why is it that you're picking on the black and brown students to send to the principal? No one ever asked that question. And we hear, honestly, we hear the teachers union saying, you know, that we're fighting for these kids who are disproportionately disciplined. Black and brown kids are disproportionately disciplined. Who's reporting the kids to the principal? It's you. You're the ones who are making that decision. So do you not hold a little bit of the blame here? Or are you just putting it all on the principal? That doesn't seem right. Now, in fairness, there are more things that apparently cause some consternation. They didn't get very specific in the Seattle Times article. They just said there was religious discrimination. Okay, what kind? Can you give me a little bit more details? Because obviously something like that, I'm going to be a little bit more sensitive to. They say that she committed a, quote, failure to fulfill students' individualized education plans. Again, quick question. Is it up to the principal to come up with an individualized education plan for a kid? Isn't that the teacher's job?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So that one doesn't make sense. And then they say a misuse of Title I funds. Number one, I don't know what Title I is. Was briefly interested in finding out, and then I forgot, so I didn't Google it. But that's something that's easy to explore, right? I mean, misuse because you don't like how it was spent, but it was technically following the rules, or is it misuse because it was spent on Title IX fund, whatever it is. Like a lot of this, because it's so, I want to say nebulous, they're not being very specific here. Something, and I don't normally side with educators, period, right? I just generally don't. Something about this story feels off. It feels like this was a coordinated campaign from people who just maybe don't like her leadership style. And that's a fair complaint if you don't like someone's leadership style. I totally get it. But that's kind of more on you than it is on the leader. Better leaders, I suppose, will change or adapt to different people. Or they'll be like me saying, okay, that's on you. I'm going to yell at you if you don't like it. Too bad. Get a new job. You got that? You got that?
I've experienced that several times already.
Oh, shut up. No, I didn't. I didn't yell at you once. I gave you a look one time. One time! I saw this story a few weeks ago in the Times, basically doing just a continuation of, there have been many complaints. There's now, it's not technically an investigation, but it kind of is an investigation into how she's approaching the school. She is quoted from an email that she sent to the parents, I guess within the last day, saying there is more than one side to every story. The first sounds true until you hear the other side of the story. I ask for your patience. Now, that's what someone who's guilty would say as well. It's not just, that's the problem with people who are legitimately innocent of doing anything. Like, if only you heard the full story. Well, you could tell me the full story. Can you not? Could you not have put the full story in this email that you're sending out other than saying, well, there's more to the story? Okay, you just wrote this long letter. Could you include some of those details? Not even one? Just like, and by the way, this is what really, none of that. So I don't quite know who to believe. I just naturally like rooting for the underdog, right? And you're telling me that she is a mean-spirited person. I'm definitely going for her. But here's what really is pushing me in her direction. She's being given a job temporarily within the central office. They didn't give any details as to what the job actually is. I don't think they know. I think they're trying to figure out what they're going to do for her. Ultimately, she's going to go back into a classroom, right? She's going to become a principal again. They're just going to wait maybe until the next semester before they make that decision, or when there's an opening before they do that. So she'll be fine. She's currently still making her principal salary, by the way. I get that unions offer protections for people who are not deserving of protections. That's just part of the gig. But if this was truly a problematic person, wouldn't you do something more than just reassign her to a job that's sort of less strenuous, but making exactly the same amount of money?
Kind of sounds like they're just sweeping it under the rug a little.
It does feel that way. And perhaps they're doing that to placate the parents, but they really back this principal. Because she's been in this, they say that this has been going on for years. Well, they've only made a decision now, right? So it's been going on for years, whatever the, you know, bad behavior was. And they only decided now, and she's not being canned. She's not being disciplined beyond being removed from the school and put into another, what sounds like a cush job. It sounds like they don't even have anything for her to do, but they'll make it up as they go along. Like she'll just be on Tinder all day. Assuming she's, well, I don't have to assume that she's single to be on Tinder, but you know what I mean.
I feel like that sounds like a lot of jobs in academia, honestly, just sitting around, not doing much, but.
Oh no, don't say that, because then people will get all upset when you say, well, you do get summers off. Oh, we work 14-hour day. No, you don't. Stop it. Oh my God. I'm up until midnight every day grading papers. No, you're not. You don't even give out grades anymore because they're racist. So please spare me. Push the button.
What's trending? Let's get political.
So activists in Wisconsin spent the day trying to get people to not vote for Joe Biden. These are Democrats who want to, their version of uncommitted is uninstructed. Because yes, we actually do have a whole bunch of primaries going on today. Rhode Island, Connecticut, Wisconsin. And we're obviously paying close attention to the others, the uncommitted. Right now, for example, in Connecticut, Joe Biden has 76% of the vote, but 23% for other. They don't have a whole bunch of votes coming in quite yet, but they want to know whether or not the base of the progressive movement will send another message or try to send another message that they're upset that he believes that Israel has a right to exist and that not all Jews are evil and deserving of death. Weird position for him to take. I know, as a Jew, I'm shocked. But they're upset. They want to do what happened in Michigan. want to do to an extent what happened here in Washington. Here's an activist named Hala Ahmed talking to MSNBC.
I think the Democratic Party has lost all legitimacy in our communities. If in November we still don't have a ceasefire, I don't know what will be left in Gaza. And that's our focus in this campaign.
Got it. Okay. She doesn't know what will be left. Oh, no. I mean, hopefully not Hamas, which is really what they're all upset about. Yeah. I mean, imagine hating Israel and Jews so much that you would lose all faith in an entire party because the president of said party thinks Israel should exist, just like literally exist. Like, that's a lot of hatred to have in one's heart, like a lot. Here's another activist. Her name is Dalia Saba, and she thinks that not hating Jews is alienating the base.
Joe Biden has already won the Democratic nomination, so the uninstructed campaign is really a way of sending a message. It is not about him actually becoming president or not. It is a way for us to quantify, this is how many people care about this issue. We are Democrats. We are voting in the Democratic primary. These are your constituents, and your policy is alienating them.
Okay. I mean, you could always just take a survey. You can do it on, like, Instagram. They have those new surveys now. Or Twitter, you can do a poll. You don't have to do this. You know, it's one thing to participate in this virtue signal, which is all it is. It's completely symbolic, and symbolism has, you know, its place. But does anyone legitimately think that all these people who vote today as uninstructed or voted as uncommitted, whatever, that they're going to do the same thing during the election? No, they're going to vote still overwhelmingly for Joe Biden. Here's the kicker, though. Wisconsin, just like Michigan, incredibly close. I mean, Wisconsin, Joe Biden won by like 20,000 votes in the last election. This is a purple red state that flipped for a variety of reasons, but barely, right? So if you do end up getting a 20,000 vote FU to the Biden administration, oh yeah, okay. I mean, that will actually hurt them. Same in Michigan. And all the polling has been pretty consistent. It's funny because if you look at the Real Clear average, the way that they do their polls, they look at a bunch of polls that are semi-recent. Not all of them are very recent. For example, some of the polls are from like early January, late December. And they say Trump is up by 0.8%. And I totally believe that it's very, very close. But 4 out of the 5 last polls, with one exception, 4 out of the 5 was either 3 or 4 points for Trump. Biden had one poll where he was a point up. Again, I think it's close, but I don't know if it's as close as everyone is saying in Wisconsin. The same thing is true in Michigan and Arizona and Nevada and Georgia. It's just not as close as they claim. So maybe at the end of the day, this isn't even going to matter at all, that you just got a whole bunch of anti-Semites upset, which to me, like, I'm totally okay with that, regardless of the political implications. Making an anti-Semite upset just by, like, existing as a Jew?
Okay. That makes your day.
Yeah, I'm down. I'm in for it. You want to see my Star of David? Will that really send you over? Because I haven't taken this off my neck. Except for, you know, when it that one time it broke because I pulled on it by accident. Outside of that, in what, a decade? So every time I walk by, do you think they get a little, like, what? I feel cold all of a sudden.
I think they get a little, yeah, deep down, something irks them.
You go, I smell sulfur. What is it? There must be a Jew around. I legitimately think that these people think things like this. They're just awful people. And, you know, I like the media pretends that they hold totally legitimate views and it's worthy of equal time. They're marching for the destruction of Israel. We heard last hour from a guy who spoke to a teacher in West Seattle, doubling down that Hamas committing rape is totally okay. Like, if that's truly on the video, what Adam Gillette from Accuracy and Media said, how does he still stay employed? He should be hanging out with Anitra, who something tells me she would probably get him in line. But if he truly said that, if you've got a teacher who's literally defended rape and was crystal clear, there wasn't any sort of, you know, talking around it where it sounds like he's doing it, but he's being very careful. How does anyone justify keeping that person on a payroll?
No, Jason, I was assured they just want to get rid of the settlements. That's
yeah,
it.
Just the settlements. What settlements are you even talking? Now we're going to the West Bank. Like, what are you even talking about, people? Well, see, and the more you hear from these people, you realize how little they even understand, which is probably how they justify the whole, let's just scream Palestine. What kind of land do you mean? Oh, you know all of it. You're not even going to point to a specific part like Gaza or the West Bank, and you don't even know what the West Bank even is, do you? You
just, I don't think they know like what bank of what river
yeah,
it is.
They're
on.
Like, well, the West Bank is better than the East Bank. They're always running out of money at the ATMs, and the West Bank is where it's at. These people have no clue what it is they're talking about. Gaza is very small, right? It's very small. And the thing is, Gaza could have been a huge tourist destination. It is part of a beautiful piece of land. Beautiful. You could have this could have been a hot vacation spot, if not for all the, you know, fundamentalism and hatred of like women taking off their hat. It's on them that they did. And it's not on Jews. Jews did not elect Hamas. They had nothing to do with that, I assure you. And when you decided to elect Hamas, all the way through when you decided to cheer on the streets when dead Israeli women were being paraded around, bodies broken, raped bodies broken, spitting on them, hitting them, laughing about it, taking video. Like, yeah, you kind of did some of this to yourself. Sorry, that's the truth. Are there innocent Palestinians? 100%. I refuse to believe that every single person in Gaza supports Hamas and hates Jews. And we know, as a matter of fact, that that's not the case, because you do realize that Palestinians are allowed to work in Israel. The other way around is not appropriate. They don't allow it. You don't get to work. You get immediately killed. And keep in mind that great bastion of freedoms, if not for the oppressive Jews, that the progressive activists on Seattle streets are marching and supporting, a whole bunch of people who are gay or trans, they escape Gaza and they go to Israel, where they actually have rights. You see, if you're gay or trans in Gaza, they throw you from rooftops. Crazy, I know, that you're falling on their side of this. I thought you were all about LGBTQIA2S++ rights. There's no plus plus in Gaza. There's no L or G or B or T. There's no non-binary people. Because if they're ever outed as that, they're killed. And the ones who are from the area, they escape if they can. And yet you never hear any of that. You never hear any of the subjugation of women, women's rights. You think you have women's rights in Gaza? Oh, we're raising funds to get women their access to reproductive freedom. Yeah, that doesn't happen there. They don't care. The men don't care. You realize that that's the folks that you're fighting for, right? And again, God forbid any of these people actually get asked that question, but instead you'll get some reporter from a local television station going down to one of these rallies and just say, okay, well, how does this make you feel? Tell us. And then they'll air it. They won't show the signs that say they don't want two states, they want 1948. They won't give you the truth of what it is they're calling for, like another intifada. They won't play any of the sounds of their chants about how they want to destroy Israel. They'll never do that. They'll just give them equal time. They're totally legitimate in their hatred. I mean, in their position against the oppressors in Israel, right? 1-800-465. Other than that, by the way, I think they're very passionate and I support all of their activism. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. It's the Jason Rand Show.
The Jason Rand Show.
Here to react, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rand.
And the rise of soft on crime laws and policies have made it worse.
Our man in the Pacific Northwest, Jason Rand, is on that.
You keep on bringing these extraordinary stories from Seattle. It's amazing.
Long form.
It's not a secret that the Seattle Police Department is dealing with a staffing crisis. The problem is it's much worse than the local leaders admit it to be. The department had only 437 police officers assigned to patrol. That according to HR documents that I obtained. Now, of the 437 officers, at least 66 are currently eligible for retirement. And 84 of them are over the age of 50. So not only is hiring not keeping up with the over 700 separations in the last 5 years, the cops that you do have, they are eligible for retirement in significant numbers. Now, all inclusive, this police force is only 913 deployable officers deep. In 1957, according to a document I obtained, that number was 925. So we are doing worse than we were in 1957, despite the rise in crime and obviously the rise in population. Joining me on the line to discuss is the Seattle Police Officer Guild President, Officer Mike Solon. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jason. Happy to be here.
Alarming numbers. I was even shocked at how bad they were. I knew that they were bad, but once I got these HR documents, which I should note, cover up until October of 2023. So there's going to be some differences between now and then. But I am told, courtesy of two sources, that the numbers I just gave you are pretty accurate to where things are now. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I would say it's pretty accurate. And we've been sounding the alarm here from the union, publicly and privately with the city, that this is a major, major issue. And what it is, it's a direct reflection and the cause effect of politicians in the past 2020, that city council that were finally basically taken out of office, the majority of them. Mm-hmm. When you target police officers just for being police officers for an ideology and activist agenda, this is the result. And the community suffers, public safety suffers. And Jason, this is going to take decades to dig ourselves out of this hole. And it was completely avoidable. That's the sad reality. They have decimated an outstanding police force.
I think that's incredibly important to underscore, right, that this was a decision that was made. This isn't because, you know, forces just happened to align at the right time and it was bad timing for the city and for the police department. That has nothing to do with this. These were, for the most part, we're talking about choices that were made. You know, I look at the fact that you've got a pretty old group of officers now, right? I mean, on the one hand, you look towards that and say, well, there's a lot of institutional experience, there's a lot of community engagement and relationships, but all of a sudden, if they were to retire today, assuming all those who were eligible for retirement today, which all inclusive is a little over 200, that would decimate this department and take away with it so much knowledge.
Yeah, and you're so right to point out the knowledge component of this. It's like any profession. The more experience you have, the better you are at your job. Yep. Same thing applies here, even then some, with, let's just look at case detective work, investigative work. I mean, the loss of that knowledge base, you can't replace it without more people that have had the tenure and the experience that case detectives had. And then you look at patrol operations, senior officers that can guide newer officers to provide a pathway of training of what to do, what not to do. It's invaluable. And these decisions that you've highlighted succinctly, these choices made by these politicians, these feckless politicians that caused this problem, this is the result. And it will take, again, I can't say this enough, decades to dig ourselves out of this hole.
When I looked at specific units within the Seattle Police Department, that is really where some of the problems get highlighted. You've got a department that covers property crime and juvenile crimes, which I have to assume those two were connected due to maybe historically you saw more juveniles committing property crimes than not. Obviously, no one saw, you know, 5 years ago, no one saw the juvenile crime surge being so violent. Just looking at those numbers, I mean, the staffing for those department, for that specific department, is just a handful of officers. That cannot be, you know, in the best interests of safety.
No, safety is out the window with these decisions. And that's my biggest concern, is the safety of the community. And then you dovetail that in that officers are members of this community. Mm-hmm. We work for the community. We are community. And what's the safety of the officers working the street too? You're not going to have adequate backup to be there when you need it. And these are the causal effects of these decisions that you continue to point out, which is just on point, and I appreciate it. Like, people don't really understand until it impacts their doorstep of how drastic this is. And then as a union, we have to work with the department to try to help alleviate this pressure. And it's taking big thinking and thinking outside the box, I should say, to try to alleviate this pressure. But this calamity is a serious, serious problem. That it's going to take forward thinking and effective leadership from City Hall, the City Council. And I think this new City Council, in the 3 months that they've been in office, we're seeing that leadership, mm-hmm. that governance that didn't exist in years past. And we're very thankful, and we remain optimistic that we can climb ourselves out of this.
SPOG President Officer Mike Sullen joining me on the line. One other thing that will certainly help, or you would assume it would help, is in recruitment, is the new tentatively agreed to contract. You guys have been working without a contract for a little over 2 years, almost 3 years all in. Obviously, you can't get into some of the specifics of the contract, but over the weekend, we heard that this was at least tentatively approved. What can you tell us?
Well, I can tell you that this TA announcement that we heard via the media is emblematic of hard work at the bargaining table and meeting with city leadership, their negotiation team that's finally been given direction that's reasonable, moderate, and based in common sense. And we're happy to continue negotiating with politicians that actually are making good decisions versus decisions in the past that was based on ideology and feckless leadership mm-hmm. that have caused this problem. And we're confident that with this city council and the direction of the executive, the mayor, we can continue to meet and work on these complex, nuanced issues in a way that is based in common sense and reality.
What's the timeline exactly?
I can't really speak specifically to the TA agreement, but we're hoping in these informational sessions that the membership is made aware of the deal and they vote on it, and then it's put in the city council hands.
How imminent, though, is it? I mean, over the course of the next few days, will the info sessions be held, or can this be dragged out?
Well, right now, we're doing informational sessions to the membership this week, and then the membership will have the opportunity to vote on it. And then it'll be, depending upon whether it's yes or no, whether or not it lands in the city council's hands for a full vote.
Do you expect a yes vote?
I can't get into that. I don't want to try to influence anybody in the membership. That would be out of my, that wouldn't be prudent of me. All we're supposed to be doing, and we are doing that, is to just lay out what was negotiated at the table without influence or without trying to sell this and let the membership get informed. And my job as the president is to advocate for them. Mm-hmm. And the contract team did an amazing job as we negotiated with the city team for now over 3 years. And we're very thankful that there are people in place in the political conversation, such as the city council, that are serious about governing. And, you know, the hard work that was put in is a reflection of that. It's the reason why we have a TA.
You obviously have a much friendlier council now than you did in the past. Was the negotiation timeline impacted by the fact that you knew you would have a more friendly council?
Well, we were looking forward to a more friendly council, definitely a more moderate council based in common sense. Obviously, the jury's still out in terms of their voting habits because mm-hmm. they're brand new. But we're remaining hopeful that they're moderate and based in common sense. It was quite evident to us. I mean, we have to sit at the table and bargain in good faith, and we did that. But the past counsel were absolutely unreasonable. Mm-hmm. And but, you know, you still have to sit there and you have to bargain these issues. But that is the sole reason as to why this took so long.
Yeah.
You know, being out of contract for over 3 years is absolutely insane. And it's a reflection of not respecting your employees, particularly the police employees. No other union would has to put up with what we put up with.
Well, they would strike. They would strike. I mean, it's illegal to strike in Washington State, but they do it anyway on the teachers union side. You guys obviously would not be able to get away with it just from an optics perspective, because lives are on the line when you do that.
Sure. Yeah, we never would, right? That just goes against the nature of our oath of service. But, you know, back to the positive piece of this is that we wouldn't be sitting here today unless there was a direction from President Sarah Nelson of the council and the direction of Mayor Harrell's team, who have done a lot of the heavy lifting to get to some type of reasonable governance, which has been sorely lacking in the past, what would you say, since 2020?
Yeah, I mean, I would argue probably before that, because as you know, the mass exodus the mass exodus of officers started in 2018. And in 2018, you know, you guys were dealing without a contract then as well. And that's the I was about to point out that, you know, it's absurd that you have to work without a contract, but this is not something SPD doesn't have experience with. You have worked without a contract before for quite a long time.
Yeah, it's a problem that I hope gets rectified in the future, because it's unreasonable to work under an expired contract. And I don't even think it makes good business sense. I mean, if you're the city, you know, you're looking at, in a negotiated setting, wages are bargainable. And particularly when it comes to retroactive wages, when you work under cost of living that obviously is higher than it was in 2020, does that really make good business sense to then have to pay all this retro money to the employees that worked under those conditions? I mean, to me, I would rather much rather bargain contracts that are yet to expire, and then you're on a sound footing with your employer. And it adds to better relations. And hopefully with this new political direction of common sense and moderate and moderate people, that we can have a more reasonable approach to and a new path forward of negotiations and treating the police union with respect versus trepidation and constantly being in fear of the lunatic mass police accountability, very vocal group of people that are very small, you know, without acquiescing to their demands. And you get more balanced and reasonable government.
Yeah, and to your point, we'll find out whether or not the council will back up some of its, you know, clearly more positive tone in how they end up voting on this. We'll see over the course of the next few days, as you have these info sessions and as, frankly, they end up getting leaked to me, what's actually in this contract, and we'll see whether or not the council will give it the thumbs up or the thumbs down. Certainly, it seems, again, just based solely on rhetoric, that they would be very open to whatever it is that they get and would likely give it a thumbs up. But we'll find out over the course of the coming week or so. And we'll obviously hear from the activists who, no matter what it was that you put in this contract, unless it called for the total defunding and abolition of SPD, they would be upset. Mike Solon is the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild. Thank you so much for stopping by.
You bet, Jason. Brighter days are ahead. And we're looking forward to those days for sure.
No kidding. You're listening to the Jason Rant Show. Again, that was SPOG President Officer Mike Solon. We're back with some quick hits after this.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
There was a story in the Washington Post that caught my attention because it read, like, unfortunately, too many Washington Post stories read, like a press release coming from the Democrat Party and the Biden White House. And I thought it was a really good example of how media bias works and how sometimes, unless you go out looking for it, it's very easy to miss. And certainly they're hoping over at the Washington Post that you miss it or ignore it and don't shine a spotlight on it, because this is all intentional. They are trying to work for Democrats. And in this case, we're talking about a story that should have delivered some nonpartisan objective reporting. It's about the bipartisan pushback on a judicial nominee that the White House is desperate to get approved, but you've got three Democrat senators and all the Republicans saying, no, we're not good with this. And instead of just giving you just the facts, ma'am, instead of just giving you the basics, being down the middle, nonpartisan, you get something that is incredibly partisan, framed around a White House talking point about Islamophobia, because in this case, the judicial nominee happens to be Muslim. And anytime you push back against someone who happens to be Muslim, well, that means you're an Islamophobe. If you push back against someone who's trans, it's because you're transphobic. Even when you don't mention any of that at all. And because the Washington Post is so incredibly lazy, they just go with it. They move with it. Maybe they think that this just gets them clicks and they're not doing it to try to help Joe Biden. They're just doing it because they think it gets more eyeballs on a story that perhaps people wouldn't think would be all that interesting. It's like, who cares? Is an internal fight over a judicial nominee? Whatever. But it is incredibly important, and there are a lot of implications here. Now, the name of the nominee is Adil Mangi, or Mangi, M-A-N-G-I. And what's curious, the reason why they're suddenly talking about this is because you just had two additional senators coming out and saying they're not going to support his nomination to the Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit. He was always opposed from the beginning. As I recall, he was opposed by Senator Joe Manchin, the West Virginia moderate Democrat. But he's also now opposed by the two senators from Nevada, Catherine Cortez Masto and Jackie Rosen. And the newest article, for some reason, doesn't use the space it has. And they've got a lot of space. This story, in fact, was quite lengthy. But they don't spend time explaining the specifics about why he is opposed now by three Democrats along with all of the Republicans. Instead, what it does is just lean on quotes that defend him, interviews that defend him. And you can tell that this is a partisan hit job because the reporter in this, her name is Toby Araji. Even in the story, it's almost like a throwaway line where it quotes speculation that the real reason there's opposition, at least from the conservatives, is that there is concern that if they were to give the approval here, they would lose the conservative majority on the bench in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. Now, obviously, that doesn't make any sense in the context of three Democrats who have opposed. But if you're going to speculate that that's the real reason behind all of this, why then push this Islamophobia fear? Why push that smear against Republicans and I guess now three Democrat senators that the only reason why they're pushing back is that he happens to be Muslim? Why even do that? Why wouldn't that be the throwaway line and then the focus more on the implications of him on the bench? This is not journalism. It is a press release. It is not journalism. It is just a bunch of talking points that make it easier for Democrats to get their message in front of people. Now, how many people end up reading this story? I have no idea, obviously. But anyone reading this story, it is a disservice to them. Washington Post is providing a disservice. Now, one big reason why you now have three Democrats on board, along with all of the Republicans, is that law enforcement groups across the country, as well as a lot of Jewish groups, oppose this guy. So why? Why first do law enforcement groups oppose? You don't really get a good sense, certainly not with any details, from this Washington Post article. Well, it turns out that this judge, he had an advisory role with an organization called the Alliance of Families for Justice. Now, this is, anytime you have justice in a name, weirdly enough, they oppose actual justice. They are driven by an ideology 9 times out of 10. Every once in a while, you'll find a legitimate one. But 9 times out of 10, you'll just get some radical group on the left. They love talking in terms of their heroism. And this is a group, however, that's not filled with heroes, but filled with apologists for cop killers, whom they call freedom fighters. And it was founded, this group, by Kathy Boden, who is a cop killer. She took part, in a Brinks armored car robbery, a truck robbery. They were trying to steal money. She was with two other accomplices. She, by the way, is a former Weather Underground activist. Some might call them domestic terrorists. And she ended up pleading guilty to felony murder because in this robbery, she acted as the so-called decoy that ended up luring two cops to put their weapons down during this robbery. And it was at that point that they were ambushed and executed. She pled guilty to this. She went to jail for 23 years, which frankly wasn't long enough. But then she gets out. She becomes an activist. She was an activist going into jail. Remember, Weather Underground, that was an activist group, a violent one. But after she served her time, she ends up creating this or co-founding this group, AFJ, Alliance of Families for Justice. And in doing so, ended up kind of celebrating her act as she works to basically keep criminals out of jail or get them out of jail early. That's really what this is all about. In fact, they've got, just to celebrate her legacy, the AFJ sponsors a paid year-long fellowship called the Kathy Bowden Fellowship. And so you've got this potential judge on the Third Circuit, Judge Manji, as an advisor here. That is obviously going to get the attention of law enforcement groups. They're going to wonder why you would have someone like this on the board, right? And they're going to say to themselves, well, you have him on the board as an advisor because presumably he supports the message. So why would you want him on the court if he supports the messages coming from this group or the general aim here? You're going to assume that if, God forbid, another cop is murdered, and a cop will be murdered, unfortunately. We know that that is an inevitability based on their job. If it happens in the Third Circuit and a court ends up, you know, making the wrong decision or the right decision, but then gets appealed and then it ends up going up to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, would you want to risk that case being heard by a guy who's an advisor to a group that considers cop killers freedom fighters? Of course not. That would make no sense. Now, the other big issue with him, and again, you get a little bit of reporting around this, but not any specifics, is that he worked on the board of advisors for the Center for Security, Race, and Rights over at Rutgers Law School. He did that from 2019 through 2023, and during that, they hosted a whole bunch of speakers who are virulently anti-Israel. The group itself is anti-Israel. And he pulled that silly claim that, oh, just because some people speak here who hold a view does not mean I share them. No, I suppose it doesn't, but when like a lot of those speakers hold the same virulently anti-Semitic view and you choose to stay on as an advisor, yeah, then I think it's fair to assume that there's some shared viewpoints on Israel. So this is why there are some Jewish groups and pro-Israel groups speaking out as well. Now, not all of the groups are speaking out. There are some of the left-wing groups like the ADL, which it takes a lot to get them to criticize a Democrat. Seriously, it takes a lot. They started to change their tone a little bit after October 7th, but that feels long gone. They're one of the groups that's standing with Judge Manji, pretending that somehow this is about Islamophobia. Now, let's say you disagree with the concerns that I just expressed, the concerns of other people. That's totally fine. We can have that debate. I think it's important to have that debate. That's why you go through the process like this to get confirmed. But in what world would you jump to a conclusion that this has to do with him being Muslim? Are we to believe that if this guy's name was John Johnson and he's this like waspy Christian from Santa Barbara, California, you mean to tell me there would be no concerns raised by the right and at least three members on the left? None? None whatsoever? Not even a little bit? Of course not. That's absurd. They would call that out immediately. Is that because they're anti-Christian? No. It's because they don't like people who don't seem to support cops or Israel. And that's a reasonable concern for this candidate. Unfortunately, you don't get any of that within any meaningful detail from this story. And so tell me again how this is not just a big talking point for Democrats. Exactly. 1-800-465-8770 for your texts. You're listening to The Jason Rance Show.